Hello and welcome to History Gap. I'm Georgia McAndrew.
And I'm Lucy Hunt.
This is a show dedicated to the women of history.
Little disclaimer, we are not historians, just two girls who love a good story.
Correct. Lucy, what do you think of space, as in the universe, as in where the Earth is right now, all that sort of stuff going on up there?
Up there.
Yeah, up there where the stars and the floaty things are.
I am fascinated. I feel like it's so overwhelming.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
But I find it very, very interesting and have a lot of questions about space in general.
Every time I'm hungover, I get this, like, I should be lying in my bed. And you get, like, deep hungover thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
And my brain is always,
I don't
always,
even
like,
need to be hungover. That's just...
Oops. Yeah, any sort of moment where I'm left by myself, my brain's like, ooh.
Yeah.
I'm just like, wow, why are we here?
Yeah.
Why do we exist?
And if I go too far into that narrative, I'm like, why do I do anything?
Yeah.
What's the point of anything?
Yeah,
you know, like, I'm just a tiny speck.
Yeah, I'm meaningless. Yeah, anyway, so that's the nice start to the, start to the podcast. Do you think you would go to space if you had the option?
See, I think if I had to, like, book it, if I was like, oh, you've got, like book a flight,
yeah,
I wouldn't do it.
Mm.
But if, like, it was, like, a little alien came down and was like, oh, do you want to pop up to the space 10 minutes? I'd be like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Like,
it might happen sooner than you think. There's a lot of stuff going on TikTok at the moment.
Yeah, I've seen all the little... The pellets,
yeah,
the little dots.
Aliens are coming, people.
Can't wait.
So
why are we talking about space,
Why are we
Georgia?
Talking about space? We're talking about space because today's episode is all about Katherine Johnson.
Nice.
Who is basically just an incredible mathematician and scientist. And, well, I'll tell you a little bit more about her, should I?
Can't wait, yeah, please.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
On July 20th, 1969... the world watched as Neil Armstrong and his pilot Edwin Aldrin walked on the moon. On televisions around the globe, a crackly black and white picture showed Armstrong hop out from his little space shuttle and place his feet on the powdery surface of the moon, going where no person had gone before. This historical event would be known as Apollo 11. Though many people know of the moon landing, and some, you know, some conspiracy theorists don't think that it exists.
It's a set. Yeah, it's a TV set.
That's for a whole different podcast, that one. Not so many people know of the many brilliant scientific minds that had worked for months and months to make this event to be even possible. So when everyone thinks of the moon landing, it's fair to assume that they think immediately of Neil Armstrong and his squad of male astronauts.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
But as this is History Gap, I want to take this episode to shine a light on a fantastic mathematician and scientist who was at the forefront of this research in the moon landing, whom without this event would not have been possible. And her name, as I said, is Katherine Johnson. So Katherine was born August 1918 in West Virginia as a black woman in a still heavily segregated America. In 20th century West Virginia and across the Western world, theory of eugenics was spreading with laws being passed to prevent interracial coupling, and public institutions and services remained racially segregated, including the education system until about 1954. So Katherine's parents were well aware of the country's inequality and were determined that Katherine and their other three children would have a quality education. This was because at the time, classes with black students faced limited resources and overstretched teachers, so the family decided to move to an area where there was a school entirely for black children, where their kids could have a real opportunity to learn and to grow. Now, even before Katherine had started school, it was clear that she had a passion for mathematics. In fact, it's well documented that Katherine was constantly counting, whether it was the amount of steps or skips she was doing, the forks and knives she was cleaning up, or the amounts of sides an object had that she was holding. She was always counting. And in fact, it was evident pretty early on that Katherine was a child genius. So here are just a quick list of her early achievements as this child prodigy. At age 13, she graduated from high school.
Wow. Because they skip schools. In school in America, right?
Yes. Yeah, so she was so smart. She just like bypassed through all the years.
Wow.
Graduated high school. She was 13. From there, she went to a black college called West Virginia State and graduated with a double degree in French and math at just age 18.
Just absolutely smashing life.
Mm. After this, she was invited to enroll in West Virginia College, where she graduated again with the highest honor in mathematics and was the first Black person to do so from that college.
Amazing.
Catherine had an anticipated IQ of 162. For context, the average person has an IQ of 100.
That's just amazing. And I don't even know what my IQ is, and I don't want to know.
I'm telling you, mine isn't 162. Mine is not 162. Crazy, though. And she was so smart that she was nicknamed Computer by her peers and teacher.
Great nickname.
I actually feel so inferior right now because I am so bad at maths. I've never been good at it. I never will.
I feel like you either, with maths, like my granddad is very good at maths. Mm. And I think you either have that brain or you don't.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost like a different part of your brain. Mm. I just isn't very strong for me. Like, yeah. I personally had a D at GCSE maths. Yes. And then I had to redo it at college, which I did do and I passed. Thanks, guys. I know. Thank you very much. Do you appreciate it?
She's a
it?
Child genius. Yeah.
But I just think some people are wired for numbers. Mm. And Catherine clearly was.
But she's like wired for numbers and languages.
Else. Yeah, yeah.
Like she's got a double degree in French and amazing. Maths. She's an impressive lady.
Yeah, very impressive.
I was actually having this conversation with my boyfriend Harry recently that I actually think if I sat a GCSE paper now, I would not pass it.
No.
I can't even. All those like division, all those sort of things. I can do that. I couldn't tell
What's
you that.
Oh, algebra. No.
No.
What is algebra? Why do we need it? I don't think I really fully understood it at the time. Mm. I had a tutor for maths because
so did I
needed
Mike.
It. Help.
Yeah, I had a tutor called Mike and he smelled like stale tea.
Oh, sorry, Mike, if you're listening.
It was actually not a bad smell. It was like he was quite old. It was quite comforting. Like when I was like stressed about the maths, I was like...
That's all right. I wouldn't mind being... stale tea. I wouldn't mind smelling like
that. Oh, there's worse staleness, yeah. I think, yeah.
But I think, yeah, I don't think I fully understood algebra at the time and therefore definitely don't understand it now.
Mm.
So I bet Catherine knew what algebra was. I bet she knew a thing or two about algebra.
She came out the womb like...
Yeah, I'm ready for this.
I got this. So while she was being a female computer queen, Catherine had met a man called James Goble, and she decided to swap maths for teaching and raising three daughters. Teaching was quite a popular occupation for Black women at the time. There wasn't many other areas they could get a job in, so they would often teach in Black schools and things like that. And that was until 1952, when a relative told her about an open position at the all-Black West Area Computing Section at the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics Langley Laboratory, which would become NASA. And side note, I'm going to refer to it as NASA from now on.
We're done with that.
That's easier. And so begins Catherine's journey in the race to the moon. But being a Black person and a Black woman in NASA was not an easy place to be. When Catherine joined NASA, her team was headed up by fellow Black woman and West Virginian Dorothy Vaughan. Dorothy Vaughan was also a mathematician and a computer programmer who was a vital part of early contributions in the US space program. She was also the first Black manager at NASA, with Black people and women having a complicated history with the institution. So in 1935, NASA began hiring white women with mathematics degrees, and within a decade, several hundred women were employed, but still remained classified as subprofessionals and were paid less, and there were no women of colour. Then in 1941, as America prepared to enter World War II, with staff shortages, Franklin Roosevelt passed the Executive Order 8802 that abolished racial discrimination in defence. This meant that Black people for the first time could enter the defence forces, including NASA. Many women at this time were hired to crunch numbers and work out difficult calculations for male engineers, which is where Catherine comes in. Whilst Catherine worked at NASA, there was still clear discrimination between races, including a separate bathroom and cafeteria for Black people to use. It's reported that Catherine refused to use those bathrooms, pushing back at such obvious discrimination. In an interview, Catherine said,
"We needed to be assertive as women in those days, assertive and aggressive. And the degree to which we had to be that way depended on where you were. I had to be."
2 weeks into Catherine's 33-year career at NASA, she was identified as a whiz for numbers and calculations, and so she was borrowed by the Flight Research Division. Catherine, as the only black member of staff on that team, bravely entered and worked incredibly hard in an atmosphere of sexism and racism, but also enormous pressure as the US had entered the space race with the Soviet Union. In 1957, the Soviets had launched the satellite Sputnik, changing the world forever. The satellite, for the first time, could send radio signals back to Earth, surprising the US with its capabilities, and marked the start of the space race between the two countries.
And the space race was a big deal at this time. It was almost like a race between the countries of like who had the most power, who had the most like intelligence.
So, in the Flight Research Department, Catherine made some of her greatest achievements and contributions to spatial exploration. In 1961, she analysed the flight trajectory for Alan Shepard's Freedom 7 mission, the first human space flight completed by the United States. The next year, she verified an electronic computer's calculations for the Friendship 7 mission. During this mission, John Glenn became the first American to orbit Earth. With Catherine's help, it felt possible that perhaps America could keep up with the Soviets, and the ideas of putting a man on the moon began to circulate. Intrigued with the job and sending an astronaut to the moon, Catherine was set with finding what the launch conditions of the project would be.
Can you just imagine sitting there and going, okay, I've got to figure this out. Like, it's an equation that's never been done before. This always blows my mind. I watched Oppenheimer recently.
Yes.
And they're doing all the equations and, you know, obviously it's not real. Like, that's specifically not real. But, like, and they didn't actually legit do the equations in that thing. But, like, thinking about that someone would have to sit there and work out an equation from scratch to be like, and this is how specifically it would need to be. And it would have to be so specific.
Yeah.
Blows my mind.
Yeah. I know. And that was basically her job. Obviously, she knew she was sending these people into space. So her calculations had to be absolutely exact.
You
otherwise
could not
she'd
be
kill
off.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anything could happen. And I was also reading that a lot of the time she didn't have security clearance because she was a woman and because she was black. They didn't allow her to see certain things. So sometimes she was working out calculations with actually not all the material.
Information.
But she had actually basically, so her colleague, he like scored out the information that she didn't have clearance for. And she was just secretly like holding it up to the light actually read it. So I'm just like, yeah, get it.
Oh, Michael. Okay. So, you know, you're going to make this, me jump through 10 extra hoops to even get to the
literally
starting point.
Yeah. And then obviously, you know, as I was saying, she calculated the previous flight trajectories for these other missions, and then she did get more access to things. And then obviously, tasked with finding how she could basically get these people to the moon. So she began logging 16-hour days, working tirelessly around the clock to produce results. Hours and hours and hours she spent on theory, crunching numbers, calculating over tens of thousands of calculations with various formulas and methods until, snap, she cracked it. She had figured out the exact paths for the spacecraft to orbit Earth and to land on the moon.
Imagine that moment when you've like, you know you've figured it out.
Yeah.
I wonder, I know myself, I'd be like, I need to check it again.
Just one second, guys.
Before I announce it.
I know. I think, imagine how it must have felt. She's basically like fought her way into like being in this position at NASA and like having all these men around her doubt her. And she's like, I've actually done it.
Yeah.
Like, I have worked this out.
Yeah.
Thanks to no one. So in 1969, she had managed to calculate the trajectories of Neil Armstrong's historic mission to the moon, changing the course of human history. As Mrs. Johnson herself was fond of saying, her time at NASA was a time when computers wore skirts. Alongside making the journey to the moon possible, Johnson became the first woman in her division to receive a credit as an author of a research report, and she would go on to author another 26.
Wow.
This is quite cool, actually, because this is like still a thing today in science where women get way less papers published and like way less research signed off. And she's just back in the day getting 26
Yeah,
published.
And is that a lot, would you say, then, for an average?
I don't know. Depends how busy they are. Catherine had an endless curiosity for aerospace technology, and despite her consistent hard work, she was often excluded from appropriate meetings, and it's rumoured that once denied from a meeting, she asked, "Is there a law against it?" And as there wasn't, her male colleagues could only scratch their heads and open the door and let her in. So Catherine's resilience made it possible for women to assimilate and progress in NASA. Catherine, despite the discrimination and barriers she faced across her career, was asked for the moon. And the moon she gave her country and the world.
Amazing. I love that. That's a great line.
It's a great, thank you.
That was lovely writing there, lovely.
That was all me and my below average IQ.
I love that. Oh my God, she's such an impressive woman. And I love that. How she spoke about earlier, like where, you know, you had to be assertive and, you know, you had to just make your way. And actually, like, it's still true today, like, you know, and that women get so much criticism for being assertive and bossy and, you know, you wouldn't call a man bossy, for example, but you would call a woman bossy.
Yeah.
And actually, like, no, she just knew that she was right in the room. She knew that she was the right person to be there, and she, you know, proved herself right, basically.
Yeah. And I also think, like, how selfless they are, because, or she was, and all the women who worked at NASA at that time, because obviously they're living in a country, like, ruled by white people, and the way they're treating them as, like, second-class citizens.
Yeah,
like, they
being can't actually segregated.
Yeah, like, you can't come to the same schools as us, you can't use the same bathroom as us, we can't touch things that you've touched.
It's ridiculous, yeah.
And then she still gives her country all of that. And, like, that was, like, just her passion for space and exploration.
Yeah.
It's very cool. And she actually, there was also something called Apollo 13, which is another mission that they sent astronauts out. And it basically went wrong. And she basically had to, like, under time pressure, get the safe trajectory home. And she did, and she saved them all. So
she definitely felt sick during that, surely.
Yeah.
I felt sick.
The heart's going a little bit.
Yeah. But it sounded like she just knew, like, under pressure, worked really well, knew the numbers.
Yeah.
Like a second.
She's a whiz.
Yeah, second. Yeah. Well, it was her brain. It was just, that's how she worked.
And she lived till she was 101. And in 2015, President Obama awarded her the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, and also, I don't know if you've heard of the movie Hidden Figures.
No, I haven't.
That's a whole movie about Catherine and some other of her black female colleagues that work there. And I would just really, really recommend it.
Okay.
If you're not listening to our podcast and you have an hour and
a half. Yeah, after you've listened to that episode.
But because of that, I just kind of thought, I'll have a little look at
Did you watch the movie then?
I watched the movie. Oh, yeah, it's really good. I thought I would maybe just have a little look at, like, what is, like, NASA and stuff like now. So as of 2023, only 21% of NASA's workforce are women.
Yeah.
As of 2023, this is not just NASA, but the whole world. Out of 634 space travelers, only 73 have been women. And according to the National Center for Science and Engineering Statistics, only 2% of STEM jobs are held by black women in the US. And they also are likely to earn the lowest wage in the field.
So it's still a long way to go.
A long, long way to go. But I'm sure Catherine is, like, an inspiration to so many of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Inspiration to anyone. Like, you know, she, what she did is super incredible. And actually, like, you know, she didn't get the credit. When you think about the land, you do just think of Neil Armstrong. Maybe you could have done a better quote rather than "one small step for man."
Yeah.
You could have been like, "Thanks to everyone that actually helped me on this journey."
Yeah.
Like an awards speech.
Yeah, I think it's
maybe wouldn't have been quite as catchy.
I think Catherine is just, like, a brilliant example of so many things that we are, like, aware of that happened in history.
Yeah.
And even if you just begin to peel back the layers and look at it from, like, a female lens, there's actually some incredible stories there.
Exactly.
So big up Catherine Johnson and her giant IQ. You've been listening to History Gap with us, Georgia and Lucy.
Don't forget to follow the show and check us out on TikTok at History Gap.
Love you, bye.
Love you, bye.